Williams, and I'm broadcasting today from the Hansen Family Sports Complex in North Logan. Usually, this is soccer fields, indoor soccer fields. It's a big old building. Today, the Major Brent Taylor Foundation is presenting the Cache Valley Remembers the 9/11 Project here at the Hansen Family Sports Complex. It begins today and runs through Saturday. And a lot of things going on here. And we're going to talk to various people, including the organizer of this event, Jenny Taylor, who's the Gold Star widow of Utah Army National Guard Major Brent Taylor. Jenny Taylor, thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, Tom, thank you for being here and joining us and being willing to help us tell the story and just let people know about the event.
So I want to delve into your story. But first of all, set the scene for us here. We're in this
Like you said, we should be playing futsal or lacrosse or something, but instead we are bringing in thousands of school children all the way up through, you know, high school and college, every age, and just dozens of volunteers to educate and remind all of us what happened on September 11th, 2001, which, can you believe it's been 23 years? 23 years today. It was a Tuesday morning that year, of course. But not only what happened that day, but what we can learn from what happened that day. The way America came together after that day. So we have a multimedia immersive exhibit where you will see, hear, and re-experience September 11th, 2001. If you're too young to have lived through it the first time, we'll bring you through it for now. And then we have a giant area of community organizations. The Red Cross is here, the Boys and Girls Club, the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, the Veterans Associations. People are here to talk about how we can come together as a community. So we're going to learn about the past. We're going to really live deeply in our present, and we're going to pave the way for the future to make sure that as community members, we turn toward each other rather than on each other, because we just live in such a divided time. So we are working to spark a little bit of patriotism, remind us that we have more that unites us than divides us. And so far, so good.
Good. You're just beginning. And
yeah, just beginning.
We are running through Saturday, as
yeah,
I said.
We've been here 1 hour and 8 minutes.
Yeah. One of the big stories here, and when it comes to your town, and now it's come to Logan, is the massive number of volunteers it takes to put up this event. And that's an opportunity for community.
Yes. In fact, it's one of the things I'm most proud about. I love the educational aspect. Of course, I love America and patriotism. What I'm most proud of is the fact that this brings 500 to 600 community members together. Many of them know each other, and many of them are perfect strangers until they get here. And so it's a chance to, again, bridge some of those divides, old and young, different races, ethnicities, backgrounds, demographics. And we're all here working together, serving together, helping. And there's just a magic to be found when you serve, especially when you serve with other people. And so I always tell people, if you have a relationship and you're struggling, go serve that person. And if you're really struggling in a relationship, go serve with that person. And you will find a bond that comes through service and just building a sense of community.
We just had some school kids come over, and they were trying to engage with us. Maybe I should have put them on the air here.
I think they want to be on the radio. Yeah.
We're
going to be out of a job here.
That's right. That's right. The next generation coming up. But we're at the Utah Public Radio booth. And so what we're doing is encouraging you to go to upr.org, find a time that works for you. Come over here to the Hansen Sports Complex and record your memories of 9/11. And then that'll be archived for you. You can also just come to the booth and sign up for a sign up. We're also emphasizing our role as broadcasters in the emergency alert service, which plays a role, especially highlighted by 9/11. So I want to go back to Jenny Taylor to, you know, beginnings. I think a lot of people know your story, but some may not. So maybe start with when you and Brent meet.
All right. Well, you know, it's interesting you say the beginnings. I was thinking of that. I, of course, live in North Ogden in Weber County. I was driving up the beautiful canyon this morning here to North Logan, reflecting on September 11th, 2001, all of those years ago. I was a young missionary for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I was not in the country. In fact, for years, I thought I'd missed out on this giant American defining moment. And it was not long after that missionary service, maybe a month or two after I'd gotten home, that I met my husband, Brent, while we were both college students at Brigham Young University. Don't hold that against me. I have a master's from USU and I teach there now. So I've learned to switch my blue.
BYU now does wear Aggie blue.
There we go. Yes, they got the right shade of blue. Yeah. We have a lot of blue in our house. And so, you know, my husband and I met in the early aftermath of September 11th. I had always wanted to be a history teacher. I'd always loved America and just the world and understanding our past. And he had always wanted to be a soldier. So the entire time we were dating, he was courting me and the military recruiters were courting him. So we got engaged and he enlisted into the Army within 3 days of each other, those two events. And we went on to be married. He went on to serve in the National Guard. He served twice in Iraq, twice in Afghanistan, also served as the mayor of North Ogden and a city council person for 4 years there. And then in 2018, which now is 6 years ago, he deployed to Afghanistan. We have seven children. The very day he got on the plane, our baby was 2 months old.
Wow.
Our oldest was 12 and, you know, five in the middle of that, which is a lot of kids, and a lot of chaos. And we had our hands full at home taking care of things. He had his hands full away to war and serving our country and serving the people of Afghanistan. And then very tragically on November 3rd, 2018, he was killed in action. And, you know, that turned our world upside down. It's funny to even say that because it's such an understatement. And in the aftermath of his death, I feel that the good Lord has given me and my family and so many of our friends and community members opportunities to serve, to honor, to give back. And I look at where we are now. You know, we have the Major Brent Taylor Foundation was first started to raise some scholarship money in his memory on his birthday, months after he died. And now it's grown into something where we've raised well over $1.5 million. We've serviced tens of thousands of people at this event every year, remembering 9/11. We service Gold Star families who have also lost their service member in the global war on terrorism. And more than anything, we really just try to ignite patriotism through community service. And so it's this wake of tragedy that's just turned into something so beautiful. Sometimes I'm a loss of words.
Mm-hmm. We'll move back to that impulse for Brent to serve. Did he have military in his ancestry?
He has America in his blood. I'll tell you that. If you want to know anything about Brent Taylor, you need to meet his angel mother, Tammy Taylor, who raised her eight children to really appreciate what they had, not only the opportunities as American citizens, but the responsibilities. I mean, the entire house was always red, white, and blue, Americana. They would travel to museums and national parks as a family rather than, you know, all the Disneyland and some of those things that are great, but just very focused, making sure they were well-read and well-educated. So in time after those 9/11 terrorist attacks, Brent and five of his brothers all joined the Army National Guard. Some still serve, some have retired or separated from the service, but a very patriotic family, not necessarily military service for either of us, but there was just something in him from a young age that knew that he wanted to serve. And I think he felt a sense of duty. In fact, I know he did. He's written that even in his journal and some of the memoirs we have now that he's gone from us. We have his writings where he felt it was his duty as the benefactor of the service of so many before him to put that uniform on and try to do his part. And so it's been an honor for him, I know, an honor for our family to continue serving in a very different way. I've never been to boot camp. I've never put on the uniform. But I feel I'm still serving my country and community the way I can. And I think that's what I'd encourage everyone listening to do. For some, it's in the service. For some, it's in your profession. For some, it might be the PTA or helping a child next door. All of us can give. And as we give and pay things forward and give back to those around us, we just become stronger. And that's how you build resilience. It's not just a mindset. It is a mindset, but it's also a muscle. And the only way to build it is to use it.
I want to talk about, loop back to resilience. You have a podcast, in fact, on that very subject. But I want to go back to Brent's. So he joins up. He's in the National Guard. But he wants to serve in another way. He runs for office. We're in the middle of a election season here.
Oh, you boy.
Let's heal our divisions.
Let's heal that.
Boy, we sure need that. But let's highlight the other part of that, the impulse to seek to serve.
Well, I'll walk you through that because it's kind of a funny story how it began. Like I mentioned, he deployed to Iraq twice early in our marriage and then later to Afghanistan. But during those first two Iraq deployments, we had two little babies. They were consecutive deployments. And he came home and we bought a house and we were settling down. We'd been separated, you know, most of our marriage between his military boot camp and then military deployments and two little babies. I was expecting a third baby again. And we just bought a house. And he was taking night classes at the University of Utah, dare I say. So we have red and blue at our house. He was in a Master of Public Administration class and got home late at night. I was at least 8.5 months pregnant at the time. And he said, I think I want to run for office. And I laughed just like you. I looked at him with these big wide eyes. And in fact, I remember grabbing my journal that very day. I said, I'm writing this down because you're either crazy or this is going to be a defining thing for our family. You know, one of those clear moments in time. And what had happened was he had gotten the mail as he came home, and in the mail had been the public utility bills. Now everything's so electronic. But the city utility bill had come with a newsletter saying, hey, there's a couple of vacancies on the city council. The election's coming up this fall. This would have been 2009. And so in the summer of 2009, he filed a candidacy for city council person. And during the primary and the election of all that, we had our two young ones and a newborn baby in the stroller. And we just went with him canvassing the neighborhoods, knocking on doors, meeting people. And so his service to our country and our community was always very interwoven with his service to our family. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't one or the other. You know, there's always that work-life balance at home, and it's almost impossible to keep balanced. But for him, it wasn't a back and forth balance. It was just interwoven. He wanted to serve his country, wanted to serve our God. He wanted to serve our neighbor. Everything he did was service to me and the children and our families. And he just had a tenacity for giving what he could and also inspiring those around him to give what they could in their own way. And I think that's what made him such a brilliant leader. It wasn't that he was so capable himself or so amazing himself or so accomplished himself. It was that something in him drew the best out of those around him, and together they were really able to accomplish great things at home and abroad in the service.
That is admirable. So you said there's a birthday party, right? Planned, and then of course he got killed tragically. Tell me how that turned into raising scholarships, and then a bunch of other stuff happened.
Well, you know, my husband was deployed this last time at the age of 38. And he celebrated his 39th birthday in Afghanistan. And the soldiers he was serving with were wonderful to him. The Afghans made him a cake and sang to him in broken English. They really treated him well. But that summer, while he was away from us for his birthday, I already began planning the 40th. I know a lot of people, 40th is a milestone and kind of a fun time to celebrate. And so we had started making plans. He should have been home by then. We were going to welcome him home, the mayor, the father of our children. We were going to rent some bounce houses at the park. And on top of that, his birthday is July 6th. So it's almost 4th of July. Mm-hmm. So we just had this big America party planned in mostly my mind. And then he was killed. And then the winter came and it's bleak and gloomy. And then the spring came with the reminder that the world was still turning, even though in our heads it felt it had stopped. And then as summer approached, I just had this sinking feeling of, we should be celebrating this birthday. And we were going to invite the community and thank them for supporting us through the deployment and invite the community and thank them for their service with Brent as the leader of the town. And we just decided we're going to have a birthday party and we're going to celebrate anyway. And unfortunately, he won't be there. And it was a very bittersweet day. But I think back to the 4th of July in 1776, that must have been a very bittersweet day. They declared independence and we love it and we sign our John Hancock and we're going to be free. And they knew it would come at the cost of bloodshed and years of turmoil and agony. And so as we celebrated that bittersweet birthday, we thought, let's have a scholarship opportunity where instead of asking for gifts or anything at the birthday, we just asked our friends and family to donate to a memorial fund. And again, as I mentioned, he did his master's degree at the University of Utah. He also was a doctoral candidate, nearly finished with his dissertation at the time of the final deployment. So we decided that we would do a scholarship for his university, bachelor's at BYU, master's and doctorate at the University of Utah. And For his 40th birthday, we set a goal to raise $40,000. And I'm happy to say we did it. And then we started this foundation and were able to receive 501c3 nonprofit status from the IRS, which helped other people donate maybe larger sums as for their tax purposes. And before that campaign was over, we raised $160,000. And that was where the Major Brent Taylor Foundation was born. It really was us wanting to give back something for his birthday, pay forward the life that he could no longer live, and hopefully inspire a rising generation to take a look at him and others like him as they chart their own course of life.
If you just joined us, we are broadcasting live. You can hear the background noise here, a bunch of school children here in the Hanson Sports Complex in North Logan. Right now I'm talking with Jenny Taylor, who is the Gold Star widow of Utah Army National Guard Major Brent Taylor. She also heads up the Major Brent Taylor Foundation, and that foundation is presenting Cache Valley Remembers, the 9/11 project. And we'll have more with Jenny Taylor following this brief break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and we're at the Hanson Family Sports Complex in North Logan. That's the site of Cache Valley Remembers, the 9/11 project. This is presented by the Major Brent Taylor Foundation. Booths, remembering 9/11, an exhibit, I should say, and then a bunch of booths, including Utah Public Radio's booth, and that's where we are. And we're encouraging you to go to upr.org, sign up to come over here to the Hanson Sports Complex and record your memories of 9/11. Had an effect on all of us. You could also just drop by our booth and sign up to record. We're also at our booth highlighting broadcasting's role, radio's role in emergency alert system, which of course is highlighted by such events as 9/11. I'm talking today in this part of the program with Jenny Taylor, who's the Gold Star widow of Utah Army National Guard Major Brent Taylor. And she's heads up the Major Brent Taylor Foundation, organizes this exhibit. So I want to get into talking about resilience. You can find this at the Major Brent Taylor Foundation. You have a podcast on resilience. So I guess the question occurs to me, probably a lot of people. You could have gone a different direction.
Seven
kids. Children. You could have just gone inward, right? Okay. Nobody would have thought otherwise of it. Nobody would have condemned you for that. So you went outward. Let's strengthen the community. So so that's resilience. Talk to me about resilience.
Yeah, to me, resilience is sometimes it's getting up when you're positive you can't get up, but getting up anyway. And I feel like for that first year or so after Brent died, I was in such a fog. Anyone that's experienced, you know, deep grief knows exactly what I'm talking about. You don't know who you are. You can't remember the littlest things. You're not sure you know your own name, let alone how to make dinner and cook and clean and things. And the slightest tasks feel so heavy. I feel like I was buoyed up by so many people around me. I mean, there were women in the neighborhood cooking and cleaning my house, helping me with the children, somebody else mowing the lawn, taking out the trash cans, shoveling the snow. And I was just kind of swept away, I feel, in the hands of God, of a power much greater than me, that just took me from opportunity to opportunity. And the way I describe it is this. I feel like the Lord would open a door in front of me. There would be the door open in front of me, and then I walked through it. It wasn't so much that I had these great plans. 5 years ago, I certainly didn't envision any of this. The birthday party I had planned, I'll admit that. Mm-hmm. Everything else, it's just been so organic, and one thing has led to another, and we've grown in volunteer support. I joke, I talk a lot, and I have bright red hair, so a lot of attention gets given. Oh, there's Jenny. When in reality, by there's Jenny, what you mean is, oh, there's dozens of people behind the scenes. There's hundreds of volunteers pulling that off. I have an incredible team. The co-founder of this exhibit is Johnny Ferry. We have so many people that keep me on my toes and make up for what I lack. But for me, resilience is not isolation. In fact, it can't exist in isolation. And it's different from independence. Now, we need to be independent, self-reliant. I'm all about that, of course. But I think we miss the mark when we think we then have to endure everything we then are asked to endure alone. When we look at real resilience, I think part of resilience is recognizing you need other people. You need other resources. You can't do it alone. There is no such thing as one Superman or Superwoman. And so when I look at it, I like to say that resilience is a muscle and a mindset. Unfortunately, the only way to build a muscle is to build it, to use it, to work it. If you're really in the gym, we got to tear those muscle fibers by lifting up a little heavier weight tomorrow, a little heavier weight next week, and it hurts. But if you want to build that muscle, that's the way to get there. So that's how resilience is. We become resilient by facing things we probably just don't want to face. But at the same time, to that muscle, I think it's a mindset. I find a lot of people look from the outside at someone who maybe seems resilient or capable or strong or whatever word you put with it. And I think they think, oh, that person was born that way. That person is so strong. I could never be that strong. I've heard it before. I could never do what you're doing. I could never face what you're facing. When in reality, I think some of the most resilient people I know are some of the most terrified, overwhelmed, almost broken people I know who've taken a step forward anyway. And that resilience hasn't come at a cheap price. You don't become resilient just because life's cushy for you. You develop resilience the way you develop the muscle, but you have to have the mindset. And without both, you'll never really get there. So this is a little bit cheesy, but what I say is, if you want to build the muscle, you have to use it. If you want to develop the mindset, you have to choose it. And resilience is a choice. I mean, life will throw stuff at you left and right all day long. And whether you want to or not, it's going to beat you down. You then choose to exercise that muscle. You then choose to have that mindset. And so resilience is not necessarily just, I was born that way. It's, man, I've got enough people around me reminding me they think I can do this. So I guess I'm going to believe them for a minute and get out of bed and give it a try. So if you're listening and think, oh, I'm not resilient, I couldn't do that. First of all, be careful what you say, because sometimes when you say I could never do that, life brings you that. But second of all, you can be resilient. Your resilience can build someone else. Look to the people around you. Don't consider yourself having to be independently isolated and capable. Look to the resources you have, and that might just be a friend. It might be a family member. It might be your personal faith or philosophy on life. Choose to have that positive mindset. Choose to let yourself be vulnerable and choose to be able to say, I can't do this alone. Because again, people think I'm just this great, resilient person. I've surrounded myself by a wonderful support group, a network of people. My daughter's a circus artist. She does the aerial silks and trapeze. To where you better believe that girl knows how to fall. She probably learned how to fall before she learned how to climb and swing. The coaches teach her to fall, prepare to fall, build a safety net on which to fall. And so if you're feeling that you're not resilient enough, let's get building that safety net that's not just you. Look to the resources and people around you. Look to the strength within you. And honestly, more than anything, believe in yourself by virtue of being a member of the human race. Human beings have overcome, withstood, been through, survived, thrived through thousands of years of awful world human history, and we're still here. Don't think for a second that you're the weak link in the human race. You can do this. Generations before us have done this. That's why I love history so much. People around you can do this. That means you can too. So anyway, Relentlessly Resilient is the podcast I have. We'd love to have you listen. Love to have you share your story. If for a second you think you're not resilient, I would challenge you to sit back, maybe make a list of what you faced in your life and make a list next to it of the lessons what you have faced have taught you. And you'll find, get the muscle, get the mindset. You've got both.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. By the way, we've got more and more school kids here.
Oh, it's been louder and louder.
And we got unlucky with our booth here because we're next to where kids are having a lot
game.
Of fun.
Uh-huh.
So I guess lucky for them.
Yes.
I just want one more question here, then we'll bring in.
We've got Johnny Ferry, the designer at the exhibit. Yes. Exhibit excited here. For you to talk
so
to
I wanted our segue before we go to break again.
Sure.
You've mentioned a bunch of stuff the Major Brent Taylor Foundation does. How did this connection of 9/11, remembering 9/11, start?
Well, for me, it started in January of 2021. It had been an overwhelming couple of years since my husband was killed. The pandemic was just raging. was overwhelmed and underwater with my seven children. And I sat down in January trying to just get a grip on the new year, thinking, my goodness, we're just floundering, and got out the calendar, tried to anticipate birthdays and things I could already calendar from the beginning of the year and things. And as I got to September on my calendar, I realized September of 2021 would be the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And so I called a good friend of my husband's, who happens to be the sheriff of Weber County, and said, hey, sheriff, do you know if the police or firefighters have anything planned this year? It's the big memorial, 20 years. I'm sure New York City does. I'm sure the Pentagon does. But what about Ogden, Utah? And he didn't know of anything. I didn't know of anything. And so we decided we ought to do something. And so we actually called a meeting of all the different mayors and city council people, fire chiefs and police chiefs in Weber County. I can still picture we met in the city hall basement of Roy City and just said, hey, we should do something. And I'm excited because in a minute you'll get to talk to Johnny Ferry, who's the one who came up with the something we should do. I did not design the multimedia exhibit. I simply said, hey, guys, we should do something. And he had just this creative genius. He'd been to New York to Ground Zero. He'd experienced what the museum there offers. And together we thought, what can we do to bring that to Utah? I wish I could take all the school children on a giant field trip to Manhattan, but I can't. And so he really is the brainchild behind the exhibit portion that is multimedia, immersive, takes you back in time. And that's how it started. In January of 2021, we worked on it all year and barely pulled it off by the skin of our teeth in September of 2021. Went home that weekend, took our breath and said, whew, we're done, check the list. And then we had a lot of school teachers that reached out to us after and said, that was so remarkable. That was so empowering for my students. It was so educational and so impactful. Could you do it again? And our eyes got big and wide and we looked at each other and said, I don't know, can we ever do this again? And here we are. This is the fourth time. We've been in Weber County, Davis County. Now we're up in Cache County, and it's just taken on a life of its own, a fire. You hear in the energy behind me, but it just started with kind of the thought, you know, we should do something. We should make sure we don't forget that day, make sure it doesn't just get skipped over like any other day on the calendar. And it's grown to something very remarkable.
Yeah. So I think we forget, you know, I well remember exactly where I was when I heard about 9/11, right? And, but school children, they haven't experienced that. So this is the way they learn.
Yeah. Most of us, I think you're old enough, you remember right where you were. But we're now to children and maybe even grandchildren who weren't born that day. We're moving into that next generation. And I feel we have a duty to help the rising generation learn, remember, and do something about it.
Yeah. So last question, the Major Brent Taylor Foundation, how can people help?
My goodness, that's a great question. You can find us online. Our website's majorbrenttaylor.com. You can follow us on social media at Major Brent Taylor Foundation on Facebook and Instagram. September's busy with 9/11, and then we will roll right into plans for Veterans Day. We celebrate it for 2 weeks in North Ogden, and we invite everyone to come. We fly a giant flag as big as the flag you saw in the football field of the Super Bowl. We will bring it to Utah State this Saturday in the game when they take on the University of Utah Utes. We will also fly it in a canyon in North Ogden over Veterans Day for a couple of weeks. If you want to get involved, go to our website. There's a quick button you can click. If you're not good with websites, just email me, info@majorbrenttaylor.com, info@majorbrenttaylor.com. We would love to have you support us. We'd love to bring in donors, sponsors. Everything we do is a volunteer labor. I'm not paid. Our team isn't paid. We are doing this because we love it, but what we do does take resources. And so if you're in a position to either lend, we say we'll take your time, your talent, or your treasure, any of those that you have, all in the good of igniting patriotism, bringing community members together. Please reach out to us, majorbrenttaylor.com or info@majorbrenttaylor.com.
Well, thank you so much. We've been talking with Jenny Taylor. She's heads up the Major Brent Taylor Foundation. They're presenting the Cache Valley Remembers the 9/11 Project. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been amazing to be here and have you here with us.
Appreciate it. We're going to take a brief break. We'll come back with more from the Hanson Family Sports Complex in North Logan with the Cache Valley Remembers the 9/11 Project after this. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. As you can hear, a little background noise here. We're coming to you live from the Hanson Family Sports Complex in North Logan. This is normally soccer fields, indoor soccer fields. In fact, I've attended a soccer match or two here. Now it's been repurposed As a huge 9/11 exhibit. It's called Cache Valley Remembers the 9/11 Project. It's presented by the Major Brent Taylor Foundation. And I'm joined by Johnny Ferry here. So tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Myself, I'm involved with the Major Brent Taylor Foundation. I sit on its board. But my involvement with the 9/11 project started actually before I got to involved with the Major Brent Taylor Foundation. But it all started with Jenny Taylor. Jenny was on PTA with my wife, Jen. We live in Pleasant View, and Jenny lives in North Ogden. My wife's a teacher and also involved in the community. And so Jenny and my wife were on PTA together. This is at the time Brent was alive, mayor of North Ogden. And they would have PTA meetings at our house, and Jenny would be there with her kids. And eventually Brent would come and pick those kids up, and we'd chat on the doorstep. After that, after 9/11 and after Brent enlisted and was killed in Afghanistan, Jenny set up the foundation, and we watched from a distance. We would be involved in the community, but Jenny and I happened to be having a conversation. This goes back to the 20th anniversary, which in 2021, Jenny and I were having a conversation a day before she was going in to meet with the commissioners of Weber County, and they wanted to do something more to recognize 9/11 and the events of 9/11. And she said, "Do you have any ideas?" And I said, "Well, let me think about it." And I said, "How long do I have?" And she said, "I got till tomorrow." And I went back and I spent some time thinking about it. I had recently been to the 9/11 Museum and had the experience there. And I thought about, what is it that we have? What would I want to get out of something that could be meaningful to the community, but also personal? The personal side came because I have four kids, and my four kids, none of them were alive at 9/11. And I know that they learn about it in school, and we talk about it maybe occasionally on the anniversary of 9/11 over the dinner table. But there could be something more to that. For something that was so impactful to our generation, I thought, maybe what do we have? And the thought came to me is that we have images and we've got video. We don't have crash materials. That's all on site, right? But maybe there's connections in Utah, the state of Utah, where people who are part of 9/11 live here now and could help to connect the community in that way. And so what I came up with is a concept to walk up to an image or a video and stand there with my child, my kid, and say, this is why this image is meaningful to me. And then to do that at a community level where there's interaction, where there's an opportunity to also meet and greet the members of the military, the police, fire, first responders, and just thank them for their service, for what they do. And so all of that overnight came about in the form of what you have here, which I'm an executive at Honeyville. People know Honeyville Grain around here, but Honeyville is Honeyville Incorporated. We're headquartered in Ogden. And so, we make pancakes, we make other products. And so when this all came about, I had been recently worked on a project that had these printed boards that were 4 foot by 8 foot. And I knew where they were manufactured in Davis County. And I reached out to the company there and got the specs and the details about what I could create off of those boards. And then I went to work. And over the course of several weeks, after we presented this idea to the Weber County Commission, and they absolutely loved it and said, let's do it. And so after we met there, I went and went to work and started to design each of these boards. I reached out to the Smithsonian. I reached out to the 9/11 Museum. I reached out to several who would have these images that we could use them and have this interactive experience. And then we went to work printing them. And we ended up with about 400 of these boards. And I said, well, if we're doing images, we might as well do TV too. So we added 20 TV screens. And then if we're doing that, let's make it big and go with 4 movie screens. So as you walk into this facility, it became a walkthrough maze exhibit of these images. So one concept that came from that too is I also want to take you back to how life was prior to 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
As you walk through the exhibit, you'll notice that we take you back first to your local community.
I noticed that. Yeah, I did the 30-second tour because sure. I was trying to find the booth here, getting ready for the podcast. But I wondered about that. So this is pre 9/11. What we want to remember.
That's exactly. Okay. So you walk in and you get all of Cache County. The cities are represented, and then you transition to the state of Utah.
Yeah.
Then you transition to pop culture and how life was prior to 9/11. The number one story on 9/10 was Michael Jackson's birthday.
Ah.
And it really So as we walk you into New York, we walk past the Statue of Liberty. We've got the Manhattan Bridge that you walk through. And in New York City, you start to get a feel for how life was so almost innocent in a way, and how abrupt 9/11 happened. We have in the corner a subway tunnel. You walk through the subway tunnel, and as you walk through that, you get the first sounds of the reports of 9/11. And those reports, you know, those were the ones that we all heard when we woke up that morning. Myself, I was at a food show in Las Vegas, and I turned on the TV right before the second plane hit. And I remember how impactful that was to me. And so as you walk from that subway tunnel into what we call our world events and the things that were happening, we take you through the 9/11 exhibit and a time frame, minute by minute, what was happening. We have images and videos. And then as that transitions from the day of 9/11 into the war on terror, the outcome of everything that happened over the past 20 years, that is captured at the end of it. And what we really get is the emotion that you felt of wanting to do something more for the community. And so to capture that emotion, we walk then into what we're sitting right now, into our community center. And in this community center, you'll see members of the military, police, fire. In fact, right now, there is a robot dog.
There's a robot dog
walking
yes.
right past us with a member of the military operating that. And all the kids are like,
quite smartly.
It's amazing. Yeah. And the kids are pointing and seeing this. Yeah. We've got 1,000 kids here right now coming through. And over the course of the event, we'll have over 7,000 kids that will come through as we bust them in. And that's the real goal of the exhibit, is to connect the generation that experienced 9/11 with those that didn't. Give them an opportunity to walk up to a member of the military or police or fire and thank them for their service. Thank them for what they do. And then make that connection and remind us what we said we would always remember, which was the events of 9/11.
Yeah.
That's how it came about.
Yeah. So I want to talk about that impulse. I know, you know, I know people who their response to 9/11 was, let me join the military, right?
Correct.
Let me go and serve. A lot of us had that impulse to do something, right? So now on the, 23rd anniversary, what do you say to people if they have that impulse, they're remembering this traumatic event and they want to do something? What is that something?
More than anything, like we all have talents, we have abilities, we have different needs in life. We have the chance. So the biggest thing that we've got is our time. What can we give? What can we give back to the community, particularly to those who give the greatest sacrifice of their lives? And I think from a daily basis, you have talents, you have abilities, you have things, and you think, oh, somebody else will do that. It's not true. You can take it up. You can take that flag. You can run with it, and you can be the banner of that energy to go out and make the world a better place. It's as simple as that. Mine, I didn't do this as a way for recognition or anything else, other than I wanted some way to connect with the community. And I took that idea and I got others involved. And then Jenny came along with the volunteers, with the Major Brent Taylor Foundation. And we had a cause and a purpose. And that is what really can be done. And Jenny comes from a school background, educational background. Myself, I come from business. Others of our organization just have everyday walk of life, things that they can do. So if you don't know what to do, also jump online. Find organizations that you believe in. We have our own organization, MajorBrentTaylor.com. And you can register, you can volunteer, you'll hear all the events and things that we participate in. There's, we do flag unfurlings, we hang the flags in the canyons, we have opportunities to recognize members of the military who have lost their lives and putting the flags out when they go to those funeral services. Those are the kind of things that we do. And I mean, it's a small thing, but as a whole, as a community, find a way to get involved and don't sit back.
Mm. I wonder what you would say to I'll you know, throw a kind of a complicated question at you. Handle it any way you will.
Sure.
And Jenny Taylor mentioned this earlier in the broadcast. We all know we're just so divided these days as a nation. We're in the middle of a very contentious election season. Even the flag can tend to get politicized, or they're in danger of that. And both sides are saying, I'm more patriotic than you, kind of a thing. What would you say? How do we heal those divisions?
I would say, don't focus on those divisions. Find more in the common. Find more in the good that we all have. I would suggest that 90% of what we do, we all believe in and have the same faith in. The other 10% are the things we get caught up in. And if you focus on that, that becomes, it feels something so much bigger than what it is. Now, that doesn't mean you don't stand up for what you believe in, but it also means that you can find good in others. And by doing so, it may help to then find a bridge, the gaps that we have in the divisiveness. I think that it's for us as a, whether it be politically or if it's in the way that we raise our children or the way that we live in the community, for there's a lot of things that don't get recognized and we spend time on the negative, find more on the positive, find more in the way of helping others and uplifting. And then those negative things become less and less. And I think we can overcome some of the challenges that go with that. So I think just, again, get involved. And once you get involved, you kind of, I mean, there was hundreds of volunteers that we had come out here, probably all different kind of political beliefs and background. And not one of us had a conversation around something that was negative. It was so positive because we're out here building something incredibly positive.
So what, this is kind of a bad question. Sure. We're in the middle of this year's event. Already planning for next year?
Yeah, we've got, this is something that as word gets out, we don't do tons of advertising for it because the kids do it for it. The kids who come and visit, they go home and tell their families. And then the families hear about it, like, I want to go out and see this. Yeah. This is free to the public. There's no charge for coming in. There's no, we're not trying to push any agenda or anything. It simply is to inform and remember what happened at 9/11. For future events, it's really a county level that we focused on. Opportunities in other counties are definitely open and available. We've had several county officials from different counties across the state reach out to us out of state as well, just because of the positive reaction we've had to this. What it requires is a community that has a facility that we can hold the event, and then the ability to access volunteers. And once you get that together, we can put this together and it becomes an incredible thing like you're doing here in Cache Valley.
Well, this is amazing. I'll go and do a more than 30-second run through with the exhibit. A lot of booths here as well. We're encouraging you to come down to the UPR booth and record your story, your memories of 9/11. You can go online to upr.org, upr.org to sign up or come down and sign up here. And we're highlighting the emergency alert system that broadcasting's contribution to the emergency. So tell us again the details. We're at the Hanson Family Sports Complex in North Logan. Starts each morning at when?
9 o'clock. 9 o'clock until 9 o'clock at night. 9 to 9. And this is today, Wednesday, 9/11, all the way through Saturday, 9/14, 9 to 9. And we have it's the walkthrough exhibit, the interaction with the community, a touch a truck event that after you can go out. We have in fact a Black Hawk helicopter just landed outside.
Oh, that's cool.
For the kids to go out, meet the pilot, walk around the planes, jump in the driver's seat of a fire truck, have your dreams come true that way. And then we have entertainment that's happening, a stage outside, and there's a lot of people participating in that all throughout the day. So it's a very, very much a community involvement. And with all the kids here, it just makes it so much more energetic and something for these kids to remember. So pretty exciting.
Well, we're happy this has come to Logan. Thank you. Or Cache Valley, I should say. We're in North Logan right now.
Yep.
The Major Brent Taylor Foundation presenting Cache Valley Remembers, the 9/11 Project. It's at the Hanson Family Sports Complex in North Logan, 9 in the morning to 9 at night, today through Saturday. And right now we've been talking with Johnny Ferry, who's on the board of the Major Brent Taylor Foundation and created the exhibit that you'll come and see. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. You've been listening to Access Utah, broadcasting live from North Logan, from the Cache Valley Remembers 9/11 Project from the UPR booth. Thanks, everyone, for listening.